Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Shifting Schools podcast. My name is Trisha Friedman, and we have two return guests. We have Allie and Karina on. They are both librarians and leaders, not just in the library space, but I think in the space of education. In the show notes, I'm going to link back to our earlier conversations, and I'm also going to link to Allie and Karina on social media, because just from following the two of them, I have learned so much. If you are an avid reader like me and you're not following them, they're great to follow for their fantastic book recommendations, but they're also key folks to be following when it comes to the library and AI. In this episode, we dig into what they believe is the role of the librarian when it comes to fostering AI literacy. We're also going to talk about recommendations that they have, not just for librarians, but for all educators when it comes to AI. If you like this conversation, I do want to highlight that coming up this May, Jeff and I are going to do a series of focused episodes on the art and craft of advanced prompting. Each week in May, we are going to set you up with a micro menu of some of our favorite prompts to experiment with. Each week, we'll have a different theme to encourage you and your colleagues to really get playful when it comes to AI literacy. You'll be able to download all of our free micro prompt menus from shiftingschools.com as well. So watch out for that coming up this May. Before we dig into our incredible conversation with these two phenomenal librarians, we've got a quick word from our show sponsor.
Discover the power of acknowledgement with Libra. In a world where every staff member's dedication shapes the future, recognizing their efforts becomes our mission. Libra transforms your school into a place where achievements, big and small, are celebrated daily, creating a ripple effect of motivation and pride. Join the recognition revolution with Libra, where every achievement is a cause for celebration. For more information and a free demo, contact me at jeff@shiftingschools.com today. We're excited to have GameStormers as a sponsor of the podcast. GameStormers is a creative storytelling card game for the classroom. In GameStormers, students aim to design the best 5-card narrative using cards from themes such as fantasy, sci-fi, and civilizations, complete with gorgeous art. Each student pitches their 5-card story to the other players, hoping to be voted best overall narrative. All games come with free, standards-aligned lessons on topics such as persuasive speaking, narrative writing, playful assessment, and more. Get your copy and access the free lessons at GameStormEDU.com today.
And now, with that, please welcome to the Shifting Schools podcast two of my absolutely favorite folks to follow online, Allie and Karina. Such a joy, such an honor, such a privilege to be sitting down with two of my favorite librarians. And again, listeners, you'll be able to learn ways that you too can follow them by heading over to the show notes if you aren't yet. In part, I wanted to speak with you both because I see you as forces for librarianship in this new era of information literacy because of artificial intelligence. So I thought it would be really interesting actually to kick off our conversation by heading over to an AI-powered research tool called Consensus AI. And I asked Consensus AI, quote, "Do K-12 librarians need to understand AI literacy? And Consensus AI is great with yes or no questions. It will do like a big culling of research, and it will try to either give you that yes or no if it can do. It didn't have enough research literature to answer definitively, but it did point me to some research that I'll link to in the show notes. And let me turn that question over to you, amazing humans in front of me. What responsibility, if any, do you think your profession has when it comes to cultivating, fostering AI literacy?
Okay. I think librarians have a huge role in this artificial intelligence watershed moment when it comes to our education technology. I think that this is something that is so huge. It's like the advent of Google, the advent of the internet. It's something that people feared at one time, and now we've embraced. And this is yet another moment that we're getting a lot of pushback by different sorts of educators, teachers. They have a lot of anxiety when it comes to artificial intelligence. Librarians have a lot of anxiety when it comes to AI. However, we need to embrace this new technology, and especially in the role of the librarian, because in terms of a school librarian on campus, we are most tech savvy on campus. We are the ones who teach information literacy, and we're also the first stop for our teachers to participate in professional development. We give that professional development to our teachers. And so we're probably going to be the first ones to introduce this technology to our teachers so that they can use it in the classroom. And it's a wonderful technology. And I've already started to turn it around to our teachers, because there's not only is there AI with the traditional generators like ChatGPT, and you have Google Gemini and Microsoft Copilot, but then you also have these great AI generators specifically for educators. And in a time that we're trying to do more with less, as far as less staffing, less time, more tasks thrown on the plate of educators, this is a real opportunity to work smarter and not harder. I mean, not to use that cliche, it's overused over time, but this is a real technology that can help with that and can prevent burnout. And so when I think of these wonderful generators, DiffIt and CuriePod and Magic School, all geared towards making educators' lives easier, librarians could be key in introducing that technology on campus.
Well, that was beautifully said. Yes to all of that. I guess just to kind of add to what Ali was saying, I think we have a huge responsibility as well to curate a lot of the resources that are out there right now. One of the major obstacles that I'm facing with teachers is, like Ali mentioned, a lot of the teachers are overwhelmed. So even though there's multiple platforms for the teachers to use, they really aren't making the connection between the tool and its application and pedagogy. We want to use something that's going to be, yes, of course, feasible, but meaningful and impactful in what it is that they're teaching. So while we're curating resources such as books, articles, we're also curating online tool resources that promote media literacy and critical thinking skills. And a lot of these tools also are meant to engage students. So having major discussions about what some of these tools mean in regards to its ethical considerations, because AI technologies raise important issues like privacy, access to student information, fairness, accountability. We're trying to facilitate these discussions to provide some sort of guidance on how to navigate these ethical dilemmas, quote unquote, in the context of AI, not just in its development, but how we deploy it, and also how we plan on advocating for AI policy in school districts. Not everyone has access to it just yet, because I think there's a lot of fear that surrounds, mainly because it's stemming from the unknown, right? We don't really understand what artificial intelligence necessarily means, because we know that it can be used beyond just ChatGPT, tools like that, librarians play a major role in advocating for policies that promote transparency, accountability, just to ensure that these technologies are accessible and inclusive for everyone in the school community.
And I love that you mentioned AI policy, because that goes hand in hand with whenever we hand a student a device policy and acceptable use policies when it comes to how they should behave on the internet. AI policy needs to go hand in hand. And then we need to think about things like FERPA and COPPA. And we also need to teach the literacy part of AI, how AI terminology, the little pitfalls that you can fall into when it comes to AI hallucinating. You need to verify it for accuracy. You need to verify it for bias. Remember, they're feeding these generators information, and they could be coming from certain parts of the world, certain parts of the country. And so bias, no doubt, is going to be included in that information that's generated. So we have to, as librarians, I think it behooves us to teach that AI literacy to our teachers so that they don't fall for the hallucinations, because I've been there where I'm reading some of the information that comes out of ChatGPT and it's talking nonsense, and it happens. It's a real situation. And so for one who's just going into or dabbling in AI, they need to be aware of all of these things. And I think the librarian is the perfect person to do that.
Yeah, because there's a huge impact, like potential impact. And I know, because it's already happening, for dissemination of inaccurate information. There's deep fakes. There's a lot of fabricated material out there. There are videos that my students are already showing me that they believe, and I have to tell them that's AI, right? And they'll ask me how I know. So I have to give them little tips and tricks with everything that we do to teach them how to spot a fake website, now teaching them how to spot a fake AI product. So it's very interesting because it's so deeply embedded in some of the tools that we use daily, Google Slides, Canva, and it's so easy to just drag and drop an AI-generated image and have it circulate on the internet, and or somebody take credit for AI work. I mean, there's just so many, like I mentioned earlier, just ethical implications, and these aren't things that kids usually think about, but you know, since I teach middle school and Allie teaches high school, I think our kids are at a very impressionable age, because eventually they're doing research and we don't want them to just copy and paste what they get from some sort of language model and just not have any sort of thought behind it. We're still trying to teach them how to be independent thinkers. And although it's a great tool, it's not going to completely replace their own voice.
Yeah, I hear you talking about this, both of you talking about this from the student perspective, and I think too of the librarian's role in curating resources for the adults in your community, educators included, who I know plenty of folks my age or even older who have also been confused by synthetic media. There's a great new-ish book by Danegal Young White called Wrong, and it's all about conspiratorial thinking. And what she digs into there is not just sort of the technical pieces that make it possible, but kind of our psyche and our emotional literacy, where we are so drawn to believing certain things, which I think is really interesting. So I feel like we're heading into this real information literacy renaissance, where we're maybe appreciating how we needed to be more critical readers for some time now, but really it's more important than ever before.
Thank you for tuning in to Shifting Schools. Let's pause our discussion to spotlight Libra HQ, a breakthrough in using AI to deepen connections within organizations. Imagine an environment where every staff member feels truly seen and valued. This is the heart of Libra's mission. Libra transforms how leaders celebrate and recognize the personal and professional milestones of their team members. It's not just about reminders. Libra's AI dives deeper, offering insight into enhanced team cohesion and promote a culture where support and acknowledgement are paramount. Picture a school where every individual is acknowledged, from work achievements to personal victories, creating a culture of appreciation in just minutes a day. In these challenging times, where the demands on educators have never been higher, Libra offers a way for school leaders to lead with true empathy and compassion. ensuring every team member feels an integral part of their community's success. Discover how Libra can revolutionize your school's culture. For a demo, contact me at jeff@shiftingschools.com. Let's build a future where every educator and staff member feels connected and valued. And now, let's get back to our conversation.
I'm also just kind of thinking about resources that I think can be really helpful for adults in understanding it a little bit better. And we're recording the week that Dr. Ethan Mollick's new book, Co-Intelligence, came out. And I think he does a really great job of talking about that balanced perspective of some of the very real concerns for real reasons, alongside the advantages that this technology will have for us in terms of giving folks a little more access to understanding or conceptual understanding where that might have been much trickier before. So I think that balance conversation is so critical, as well as you mentioned, educators are often very short on time. They're pulled in so many different directions, and you both do such a great job of leaving these little breadcrumb trails of, hey, you see this little tip, like this little use case that it might not be, I'm talking about stuff that I see you both do on social media. It's not an hour long workshop. It's 90 seconds from either of you. And hey, there's a great idea. And you both post a lot about Magic School AI. And I'm wondering if you can give any of our librarian listeners an example of how a tool like that could be supportive to them. Because again, I think of you both as like very cutting edge, super early adopter librarians. But for one of our librarian listeners who maybe has not tried any of these tools yet, can you recommend a way that they might get started and what difference it could make to them in their role as a librarian?
Okay. Did we make it that obvious that we like Magic School? They had a lot of great certification courses. And the reason why I take so many of those is actually for them to teach me what it's all about, because I don't always have time to attend a workshop. But that's actually a very popular question that I actually get from other librarians. Magic School is great, but it seems like a teacher tool. How do I use it in the library? And the great thing about this tool specifically is that it's not just one thing. It has so many different tools within this platform. You can ask it to create YouTube video questions, which is something that I've used, especially since sometimes I like to play a video to kind of spark students' background knowledge, kind of get them thinking, but I don't want them just sitting there and watching it. I kind of want to ask these questions as they're viewing. So the great thing about this is that you can copy and paste the link and it'll generate questions for you. There's also one of the other things that I really liked is sometimes I have difficulty coming up with lessons specifically for 3 grade levels. I don't like to do the same thing for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I want to have the same topic, but not the exact same lesson. So they actually have something called project-based learning. And if you click on that tool, you just give it a topic or a title or a description of the project, whatever your thinking is. You can add additional details, be as specific as you want. You can even align it to certain standards. So I align them to our state standards, and you generate it and it'll give you a full project plan. So I'll do this specific because you can pick the grade level. So I'll make one specifically for 6th, 7th, and 8th. Boom. I'm done. So the time that I would have spent, oh gosh, probably 2 days just trying to figure it out and throwing it away because I hate my idea. And it's not necessarily, oh, okay, I'm going to take it as is, but it gives me an idea as to where to start. And then I tweak it, add my own flavor to things, I guess. And that's been really helpful this semester, actually, especially since they're in deep with state assessment reviews. So I also have to align it to that because I don't want teachers to think that their time in the library is wasted, which is often an argument. They can't take time out of class. Okay, well, come and we'll make sure to cover the TEKS that you were trying to target today. There's also Jeopardy review games, which is really cute. I love that. Choice boards. that you can align on the principles of universal design. And oh gosh, what else? Just so many things. There's quote of the days. You could ask it to generate a newsletter for you, thank you notes, pretty much anything and everything.
It's such a great tool. And like Garina had said, the certification courses, I believe there's what, three levels, right?
Yeah, there's three levels
for Magic School student. And they walk you through it, how to prompt the different tools. Magic School has over 60 plus tools within the platform, and they're all great. And they all create just wonderful content. And it's especially helpful for me as a high school librarian, because I have chemistry AP teachers coming in to talking about, they're saying, how can you help me with ionic and covalent bonds? And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. But of course, I have a smile on my face and I'm saying, how can I not help you? I mean, I have so many lessons, and here I go to Magic School. Content creation, I need something on ionic and covalent bonds, or for biology, something on mitosis and meiosis. Whatever the case may be, there is a tool just to create content. And I go ahead and just type that into Magic School, and it spits it out in less than 3 seconds. And then I can build on that by creating a multiple choice quiz based on the content that it created to me. And then it also has a chat bot that I can ask it, I don't understand, explain ionic bonds to me as if I have no idea what they are. And it does such a great job at putting it in language that I do understand. It also has an email writer. And then my favorite thing about Magic School is that they came out with an extension, a Google extension. And so if you download that Google extension from the Chrome Web Store and you install it and pin it, you have a little purple M at the bottom right-hand corner of your browser screen. And so when you click on that M, you have, I think, 10 tools automatically ready for you to use right there instantaneously with any website that you're on. Instead of having to go directly to the Magic School website, you have it there in a Chrome extension ready to use as you want. So I love that Chrome extension for Magic School. But as a disclaimer, even though I do love Magic School and I do gravitate towards it a lot, I also love a lot of other education-focused AI generators. DFIT is amazing. It creates wonderful worksheets, great differentiation for students. CuriePod creates presentation slides that you can also edit and make them your own, put your own brand on it. It's just, and then you have these AI infused apps like Quizzes, and Garina can talk about Quizzes AI way better than I can. And Quizlet has AI built into it. And then you can just app smash these things together, like in Magic School with the video questions that Garina was talking about from YouTube. You can take those questions and put them into Edpuzzle or Nearpod and create this just a great lesson. So it's just a time saver. And I use it a lot for digital citizenship personally as a librarian to come up with some engaging lessons. But in showing these AI platforms to our teachers, they've been blown away. And the whole anxiety factor of the kids are just going to use this to cheat. I told them, you can cheat too.
Well, you pointed out how increasingly it's more and more embedded into different places. And I sort of think if we're not having that conversation about responsible use, we're actually cheating students out of that conversation about what's going to help prepare them. I love having, especially high school students, take a look at that college or university you applied to. Let's look and see what their LibGuide is for AI resources that they recommend and how many you recognize or don't recognize. But as both of you are talking about your experience with it, I think what really shines through for me is your willingness to experiment. And I think that's so crucial for us right now, is even just to try some really like weird potential use cases. I was getting an eye exam last weekend and they were saying, do you want to do some shopping for new glasses? And so my wife wasn't with me, so I feel like I couldn't be the responsible shopper on behalf of my own face. So what I did was I took out my phone. I've got ChatGPT on my phone. I took a picture of this big row of glasses and a picture of my face. And I said, based on my face, and the glasses that you see here, can you recommend your top three picks just to see what it would do? And it's really interesting to see what it will come up with. You mentioned asking it to explain a concept to you in a way that you can understand it. Sometimes I'll do that and I'll say, explain it to me as though I've got no experience, and please do so in the voice of Moira Rose from Schitt's Creek, because it makes it more fun. But, you know, I don't know if either of you is familiar with wiki racing, where essentially you've got one concept or one word and another word, and you've got to figure out, like, in as short as of clicks as possible, like, how could I get from, like, Moira Rose, for an example, to glasses. So, okay, how many different things could I click? Like, I want to get there as quickly as I can. You can ask a generative AI tool like Perplexity or ChatGPT or Latimer AI to recommend a navigated set, and then check that with students, which is kind of really interesting. Or have the generative AI tool do it. We do it on our own. Who can get there quicker, kind of a thing. So I often encourage people, like, try the thing you haven't tried yet just to see, like, where are the potential wow things that it might be able to help you with? And where are the, oh no, that's not going to be that useful.
Let's talk about GameStorm EDU. Their educational card game, GameStormers, allows students to become game designers, writers, persuasive speakers, and most importantly, storytellers. During the game, each player assumes the role of an up-and-coming creator trying to make the next big game narrative. As students select cards they will use to create their ideal five-card story, they use critical thinking and creativity to determine how to weave each card into the overall tale they will share at the end of the game. The best part? Each student flexes their persuasive speaking muscles in pitching their idea to the judge for the round and the other players, hoping to win them over with their narrative. GameStormers works well for learners as young as 6 years old who use the game's beautiful art to tell their tale. While the mechanics are unique enough to appeal to high schoolers aiming to use the ideas generated to develop their own game designs. For educators, GameStormerEDU.com provides all of the standard aligned lessons necessary to launch into creative activities following gameplay. Lessons include topics such as the math of game design, learning vocabulary through gameplay learning, engaging in narrative writing, and more. Score your copy of GameStormers and access these free lessons at GameStormEDU.com today.
I'd love to hear you both talk about that willingness to experiment. I know it's easy to say, sometimes harder to do. Do you have any words of encouragement for somebody who's listening and they're saying, okay, I hear you saying, take a risk with it, experiment. Do you have any advice for somebody who's saying, I still feel a little hesitant?
One of the things that I really had to consider, because it's absolutely overwhelming, AI has just moved so quickly and there's so many tools. The first thing I did was, okay, I picked the top five tools that I kept hearing about at workshops, conferences, especially on social media. I researched them as something as simple as going to the website and looking at its user interface and design. If I wasn't feeling it because my brain couldn't register where all the different buttons and links go, I put it on the back burner and I went to the next one. And if I found one that was easy to use, wasn't intimidating, and it seemed helpful, then I tried to create a few products during the week with it. And that's why I like Magic School 2, because it was very straight to the point. There wasn't so much jumping around, and there's AI tools that I strongly disliked, but I try to pick the ones that I know aren't overwhelming for me. Some people may not feel the same way I feel about certain tools, and that's okay. And I tell my teachers all the time, if I like, let's just say, I'm just throwing this out there. If I like CuraPod and you don't, then you might like Diffit. If you don't like Diffit, then just stick with Canva. if you don't like Canva, then there's Magic School or there's CurePod or there's quizzes. I think what's so great about our role as librarians, library media specialists, whatever you want to call us, is at the end of the day, we're an instructional partner. We're not here to preach or to be brand specific or brand loyal to anyone or anything. We're just here to make sure that we are vetting resources responsibly because we know our teachers are running on fumes. There's high stakes testing. There's limited planning, much like Ali said earlier. And our job is to help them bridge time between what's productive, what's fluff, what's effective. And there are a lot of ifs surrounding AI in the classroom. So our role is to research, try it out. I'm not going to preach about something if I haven't used it myself and how it relates to their role. And most importantly, what's cost effective. We don't get a lot of funding, and what's reliable. And sometimes some of the tools, they get, I don't know, a lot of airtime at trainings. Sometimes they won't make it past Kickstart funding. And it just depends. I really have to try multiple things and see which are clunky or limited in output, and allowing teachers to make those decisions for themselves and just kind of leading them in the right direction, in any direction, and just kind of help guiding them along the way.
There's two things you said that I absolutely love. And one in that message is you don't have to know all the things. Like, you can't keep up with it. There's no point in trying. Just in the same way that if I'm an ELA literature teacher, I can't read all the books. I can't keep up with all the new books. And the second one being, like, really lean into your own preferences. And I love that advice about if it seems too complicated, the good news is there's no shortage of these tools. So find something that's a better fit. That's really great advice. And again, advice to check in with a librarian who's probably already thinking about this and maybe already has in mind layers of complexity. Because conversely, some people are like, I love the bells, the whistles. I want all of the things. I want it to feel like I'm an astronaut and I'm flying a space shuttle kind of a thing. So thank you so much for that. I wanted to get your opinion on something that I've been really grappling with and I can't decide where I land. And it's in part to a book that I'll link to in the show notes called Filter World. And it looks at the role that recommender algorithms play in influencing where we stay, if we use Airbnb, what we purchase, if we use Amazon, what we watch, listen to, and of course, read. When I chat with authors, a lot of them talk about this new pressure that's on them to be on TikTok, to try to be also leveraging social media to get the word out there about their book. And so I'm thinking a lot about recommender algorithms as a great entry point into talking about AI and folks who think AI doesn't show up in your day-to-day. If you're streaming Netflix, AI is deciding, like, you're helping you decide what you might be watching. This interplay of social media algorithms, recommender algorithms, and how readers also get very excited about new books in new ways because of this technology. It's a complex issue for me. And I wonder how you both think or feel about social media shaping maybe the taste of what young readers who are coming to your library spaces are looking to read. What are your thoughts on kind of the influence that it gets to have in what's so important?
You came to the right place. Allie is great at TikTok.
Oh my gosh. You were talking about the authors feeling the pressure to be on TikTok. I feel the pressure as a librarian to be on TikTok. I do a lot of book recommendations through TikTok, but you're absolutely right. There has been a huge resurgence in the popularity of books, and it's a lot in part due to TikTok. Hashtag book talk is the particular hashtag that's just wild on that platform. And so I do have a lot of students coming into the library asking if I have a particular book because they heard about it on TikTok. Usually these TikTok influencers, it's what they like, and it could be a multitude of genres and age levels when it comes to the books that they're recommending. So it does take one, I'm thankful for the popularity that books have found on social media. You also have Bookstagram on Instagram. Facebook, I don't see a lot of book popularity. There's a lot of Facebook groups, but our kids aren't on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. And books have found this huge popularity there, but the recommendations aren't always spot on and what a librarian would recommend to their to our students. So when they do come into the library and they're asking for such and such book, or if they have a list of them, do you have this one? Do you have that one? We do have to kind of guide them, provide them guidance when it comes to selecting appropriate books for their age, appropriate books for where they're at in life. Sometimes they're asking for Colleen Hoover books, and these books are about 30-year-olds and with 30-year-old problems. And when it comes to our students that are ages 13 to 18, how can they relate to those problems at all? So, you know, we have to curb them back. You like that book? I do have a great young adult book that has the same drama that you want, the same type of plot line, but you have your younger characters and problems that you can relate to and something that's more appropriate for your age. So I love that as librarians, we still have a huge part in providing them that guidance and those recommendations. And we try to read as much as we can through these YA books so that we can find the right book for the right student. And I am very grateful to these social media platforms that have really pushed the love of reading, leisure reading, reading for pleasure. We can always use as much help as we can get. But we do have to take over as educators when it comes to guiding our students. But I like it. I'm getting used to the idea of being on TikTok. I'm still trying to figure it out. There are other librarians that they are experts at navigating that whole thing. Right now, I'm still dabbling and having fun with it and showing off my book displays, really basic levels, but there are definitely some TikTok rock stars out there when it comes to librarians that have really got it mastered. And I look to them to be leaders in that area, and I find inspiration with them. And it's a fun thing. It's a fun platform, and I don't think it's going away.
Well, and I love, too, this, it kind of also gives you a window into the world of independent bookstores. I feel like there's never enough of them. And I find once I follow one or two people who's also showing off displays in their independent bookstores, that algorithm's going to give me more of that content that's really fun to look at. And I cannot remember the last time I walked into a bookstore and I did not see a display that said, saw this on TikTok. So I think the influence there is really profound. But Ali, what you're talking about is that AI and human merger of these students are still coming to you. They're still talking to you. They're still getting recommendations from you, which is wonderful. And you're having students talk to you about their social media use, which I think more teens need that trusted adult that they can go to. So in a way, I think that's a wonderful avenue for that. And I love just asking folks, friends of mine who are also avid readers, what do you think is the most influential driver for you when you think back on your year or your month of reading? How did you pick those books? Like, how many did you, the book filter world I mentioned, I heard a podcast interview with the author, but that podcast episode was recommended to me by an algorithm. So how many things have I read that it's been just a strictly human recommendation? And it's really tricky, actually, for me to land on something that somebody else didn't say, oh, actually, I saw that in my Goodreads, so I read it, then I recommended it to you. So I kind of find that fascinating. And there are, again, amazing, wonderful places to be looking for great book recommendations. So in closing, I'm wondering if either of you would like to give a shout out to something that you are excited to be reading in spring of 2024, or excited, a space that you're excited to watch because the great recommendations come from that space.
Oh, man. I have been hardcore into Freedom McFadden. I love the mystery and the drama. I can't put her books down.
Have you read Teacher yet?
Have I read? No. Okay. So I read The Inmate. I'm reading The Coworker The next one I want to read is The Teacher. So I'm trying to finish. Actually, I should finish The Coworker tonight. But yeah, and then The Housemaid and The Never Lie. I have them all queued up. And all of these recommendations I got from Instagram, I thought, oh, sounds good. And then I was just, once you log in to Kindle and you finish reading the book, then it'll recommend all the other ones. So there I go, reading the synopsis and saving them for future reads. So that's what I'm excited about. Give me all the drama, all the thriller.
I think it's National Poetry Month, so I've been trying to focus my reads on poetry. I just finished a really great book. I thought it was on my bedside table, but it's not. It's called, darn it, Kin by Carol Weatherford. And it just won the Coretta Scott King Award. It was an honor book, and it's told in verse, and it's all about finding your roots. And it was just a beautiful book to read and about our American history and our history with slavery. And I think it's one of those YA books that's going to resonate with, it's going to be a big success in my library because I have a lot of poetry readers. And when it's a really impactful story like that, they just eat it up. So that's one that I'm really excited to recommend to my students. And I'm just on the search for more poetry books. Right now, I'm in a real poetry mood. So I love novels told in verse. Elizabeth Acevedo has great books that she's put out in verse. Jason Reynolds is a master of telling stories in verse. And so I'm just in search of all the great stories. I want to read all the novels. And
listeners, I feel like there's a challenge there. In the show notes, you'll find ways that you can connect with Allie if you've got one to recommend it. And we would love to hear from listeners what else you are really looking for. Like spring, I just think is you can take a book outside. I get excited about that. Or I guess where y'all are, you can do that any time of the year. But where I am, like it's still a few weeks before I can do that comfortably.
I'd say any time except summer, right, Karina? Because it is 100 degree weather, 100 degree heat.
Oh, yeah.
So taking a book outside is almost impossible during the summer months, if that even makes any sense. But right now in spring, oh, it's so breezy. It's crisp.
Fresh in the morning.
Reading season. Thank you both so much for sharing your insight, your wisdom. It is always such a joy to speak with both of you. Thank you for those recommendations. I will be checking them out. And again, folks, please, if you are not following these two incredible leaders on social media, you will thank me. You will profoundly thank me for doing that if you're not already doing so.
Very sweet.
Thank you.